This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Joy wishes to advise the following program, Hide and Seek, is a show intended for an adult audience. Generally, our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
Hide and Seek.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy, 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 enjoy. And enjoy the ride.
If you are a fan of the TV series Shameless, you'll know all about chavs. They are basically the underclass of British society. They dress in tracksuits, they like to get pissed, and they like to root a lot. A man who's done a recent study on these wonders of modern society is Professor Gavin Jack from the Law and Management Faculty at La Trobe University. Professor, welcome to Hide and Seek.
Mm. Hi there, it's good to be here.
Now, I reckon there's an accent there.
You're right, yep.
Where are you from?
I'm from Scotland originally, from a small town outside Perth. I very recently moved here to Australia, to Melbourne, about 4 months ago.
You've made Melbourne your home?
I have, yes, yeah.
Aren't welcome. We lucky? I've never seen a professor that's so good looking, frankly.
Oh.
Which I think is, there should be more of that, and all power to the Law and Management Faculty at La Trobe University. Now, Professor, tell us about, I should call you Gavin. Gavin, tell us about.
Much more comfortable.
Otherwise, it's just going to go stupid. It's probably going to go stupid anyway. Tell me about this link between the middle class British yuppies, I guess we would call them, and their attraction to these chavs. Am I saying that right, by the way?
Chavs, you are. Yeah, right. That's right. A bit of background to the piece is probably useful to answer that question.
Yeah, tell us what exactly is a chav?
Where did this come from?
Yeah.
Well, a chav is a derogatory term for the underclass.
What's its origin?
There are different accounts of its origin, actually. For some people, it can be traced back etymologically to a gypsy word, charver, which means either child or prostitute. In other accounts I've read, it's the name for people who come from Chatham, which is a town in Kent in southeast England. And then I've read also that it's an acronym that stands for Council House and Violent.
Now, that sounds a bit more like it, I
That sounds a bit more like it. That's the one I go with, yeah. So that's a bit of the etymology of it itself. And it's been around as a term in public life in the UK since about 2002. And as you rightly picked up, the characters in the series Shameless represent that very well.
And also that comedian character that recently did Boris.
Sacha
Baron Cohen.
Yeah, didn't he do a character that was...
He did that guy, Ali G.
Ali G, yeah.
Which is a little bit chav, I guess.
No, there was
lots of bling, that's right. Lots of tracksuits.
Tracksuits and
that's right.
Sort of, they speak funny too.
That's right. And that's seen as something that's supposed to characterise the chav, as opposed to say the term underclass. What marks the chav out is a specific and quite distinctive consumption style and aesthetic.
Yeah.
So it is about the bling, it's about fake tan, scraped back hair, and particularly brand conscious and brand aware are chavs. So sportswear, for example, lots of sportswear, Burberry caps, Adidas, this kind of thing.
And they do like those big names. Yeah. How do they afford those big name brands?
Most
do
often
they steal
they're knockoffs.
That's what I'm imagining.
I'm going to say they're knockoffs, but they might well steal them. Yeah, that's another route by it. Just as a quick aside, Burberry had a real problem with the chav phenomenon in the UK, because Burberry was a real brand of choice for a number of chavs.
Very elitist.
Yeah. Oh. So in 4 or 5 years in the UK,
its
Burberry sales went down because of that. Because, you know, it was seen as somehow devalued because chavs were wearing them.
There is no brand integrity in the underclass wearing elite brand.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
No.
But when I first was introduced to this term, I thought it was just term for gay men, but it's not true,
no,
is it?
It's not. It specifically refers to a particular social class in the United Kingdom, a particular fraction of the working class. So it's probably not a good idea to the UK in the UK to assume that all members of the working class are the same. There are some important distinctions, say, for example, between these chavs or the underclass and the respectable working class, those that keep themselves tidy and nice and under control and they're polite and they're not
and
out there.
Go out of their way to sort of come under the radar, I guess. They're never confrontational. They're
That's
always
right.
polite and quite religious.
That's right, oftentimes. So chavs are often stereotyped as violent, as excessive, out of control, drug-taking, sexually promiscuous, excessive in a number of different ways. And that seems to be the thing that many middle-class guys or professional guys in urban contexts have picked up on as sexually attractive and something that they desire.
So it's like a fetish then, really?
Yeah, I guess you could say that to some extent. I mean, what you've got there is a group of people that are vilified, seen as filthy and disgusting, that should be, you know, you should be repelled by them, but at the same time,
so
there seems to be a group that are attracted.
What's going on? Yeah, as soon as I was reading about it, I was like, quick, let's get up to the porn. Let's find out what I can find in chavs.
Here in Melbourne, we have four seasons. We have spring and autumn, which are my favourite two seasons because there are more tracksuit pants than anything else. And you see them swinging in the breeze and it's just a delight. I guess that happens in the UK, although it's cooler. Now, the chav phenomenon, has it just evolved or was there a demarcation where it sort of suddenly happened? How did it appear in 2002? I mean, it got a name then, but...
It did get a name then. I mean, it's part of a longer historical trajectory of cross-class sex and cross-class desire. To some extent, it's actually nothing new. I mean, if you think about the Greeks or the Romans and master-slave relationships, there's plenty of sex going on there. If we think about Victorian times, we think about novels such as Morris, it's a terrific DVD, which I spend a lot of time watching. So, an aristocrat having sex with the gardener. There's plenty of sex across class lines. So in that respect, it's nothing terribly new. It's part of a history of rough trade, if you like. So in sexual encounters with members of a lower class. But what does mark, I think, chavs out as something different, something distinctive, is that it's a highly visible subculture in the gay community in ways that these previous forms are not necessarily. And it's also marked, I think, by a number of commodity forms that didn't exist in the same way. So, you know, as
like the garb, like the drag.
Right. Like the drag, like the tracksuits, yeah. Like the Burberry caps, like the porn, the different celluloid fantasies and the bling and so on and so forth. I mean, you can buy merchandise, you can buy books that tell you how to be a good chav and what are the characteristics of chavs.
No.
Yeah, yeah. You can actually read these things and pick out names for young kids, boys and girls. If you've got babies, what would be a good chav name to call your kid? Isn't it?
Well, I can't believe like parents would actually want their kids to aspire as chavs, though. Like, is that being offensive?
Perhaps. there is an aspirational quality there. I mean, part of it, to pick up on your original question, where did this suddenly come back in? I think part of it's to do with the visibility of a number of chav celebrities in the UK, some of whom won't be familiar, I suspect, here in Australia. So someone like Daniela Westbrook, who used to be in EastEnders, she's a big cocaine taker, lost her nose and so on. She used to wear Burberry an awful lot of the time, and she was seen as an aspirational figure. Jordan would be someone else, Katie Price, Peter Andre's now ex.
Well, Sonia, our sit-in here.
She's the one with the big tits.
Yeah.
No, not Sonia. Jordan. Sorry. Oh, my God. That was bad timing.
We were talking about this off air, and she was like, the Beckhams.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Both have working class backgrounds, both have wannabe qualities, both have made it good, if you like. I mean, they're very interesting insofar as they've got an incredible amount of money,
Victoria's
been incredibly successful.
An absolute icon. Well, worldwide. She's huge in America.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've become a great brand in themselves. I think David probably more successful than she is. She's certainly much more vilified.
Yeah, she's
still
in the right way, though. We're talking to Professor Gavin Jack, who is from the Law and Management Faculty at La Trobe University. We'll take a little break and we'll come back to make a few comparisons about the chav culture, class, structure and society and sex. This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
And enjoy the ride.
Here on Hide and Seek Exposé is Professor Gavin Jack, who is from the Law and Management Faculty at La Trobe University. Gavin, you're from Scotland. Tell us a bit about your growing up in Scotland as a young gay man.
Sure. I'm from rural Scotland, originally from a small place called Blairathal, and my parents moved down to actually an even smaller place called Cooper Angus. And
your names are as weird as our small town names.
I know, they are. Funnily enough, I've spotted both those town names since I've been in Australia. So it does travel. So I'd consider myself from rural Scotland. I'd also consider myself from a working class background as well. My father was a farm labourer and my mother was a school cleaner. And they're still living, they're divorced now, but they still live in the countryside. So a very important point of departure in my life was to move from Cooper Angus, this small town that just had a chicken processing factory, down to the bright lights of Edinburgh with its festival and its gay scene and so on and so forth. So that was a really big move for me at the time.
And has a strong gay scene in Edinburgh?
It's small but perfectly formed.
Yes.
Unlike the gay scene in Glasgow, which is a little bit bigger, the gay scene in Edinburgh is pretty closed into its pink triangle. But wonderful for those years after I came out at the age of 22. But it did take me a few years.
You were at university by then?
I was, yeah. I just finished my undergraduate degree when eventually I rushed out of the closet and had my 6 months of terrific fun.
Oh, well, maybe you can't rush these things. It wasn't leaving the small town, though, that I think is interesting, which I'm from a small town here in Victoria. Well, not that small, but Bendigo. And it was my coming to Melbourne that coincided with my coming out. So your journey at university as an out gay man doing your postgraduate.
That's right, yeah.
That must have been hard to focus on your studies.
For that 6 months, yeah, they tended to come secondary to to my fun. I actually remember telling my PhD supervisor that I decided that, yeah, I was definitely gay and I was going to go out in the scene. And he just took one look at me and said, oh, we'll probably not see you for 6 months then. And he was really cool about it and very supportive.
I think what's really important is that you're now incorporating your studies into your research assignments.
Absolutely.
Wise man. Tell me what the motivation for doing this study was and what the research involved. Did you go undercover?
Sure.
Did you get all homie bro?
I'm sure he went under a lot of covers, I'd like to know.
Well, I would say that particular piece that you've got in front of you, it's just a kind of a think piece.
Professor Gavin Jack's 33-page, I'll tell you, paper titled Consuming Chavs, The Ambiguous Politics of Gay Chauvinism. Tell me about putting this little baby together. It's in really what I would refer to as academic language.
That's right.
Which is a bit like reading Shakespeare. Once you get into a pattern with it, it comes a lot more easily.
Yeah, it's just filled with lots of
jargon. Is it hard to write this stuff?
It takes a while. That particular piece took a couple of years to get organised. So, it does take a while to get these things right. That piece is written with my co-author, Joanna Bruce, from Leicester University. And the idea came for it one night when we were at clubbing, actually. And big surprise. And this one particular night, we sort of looked around on the dance floor and thought, why is everyone wearing tracksuits all of a sudden? Where the hell is this coming from?
On a dance floor?
Yeah, lots of tracksuits and lots of soccer tops as well. I hadn't been out in the gay scene for a while. I'd just come out of a 6-year-long relationship and thought, well, I'll just go back to the gay scene and see what's happening. And that was one of the first things that struck me was tracksuits. And then the next day we were chatting about this and we opened a cover of Attitude magazine, a gay magazine in the UK.
It's quite popular here.
Yeah, it had a really terrific piece by Andrew Fraser, who talked about his experiences of dressing down as a chav and going out to a gay chav night and how he tried to pass as a member of the underclass for sexual kicks. It's a really funny piece.
I'm sure that actual chavs and people who are really into chavs could totally see through this. Yeah, it's like, absolutely. If we move this to Melbourne, it's like Southsiders trying to dress as Northsiders. Like, it's just not going to work.
Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. What James is referring to, Professor, is Southsiders, as he terms it, we call it South of the Yarra.
Okay.
Okay, in gay parlance. South of the Yarra would tend to be your pretty muscle boys, the party guys.
Yuppies.
The
kind of yuppie. The younger ones are yuppie.
The Northsiders are defined by the leather culture generally. I'm talking very much generalistically as you...
And generationally,
yes. Yeah, they're defined generationally. Yes, that's true. Northsiders are a bit grungier, a bit artier perhaps, more leather fetish sort of edge.
That's where your leather clubs are.
Indeed,
they are. More gay bars rather than gay clubs. Oh,
right. So we have north of the river and south of the river here in Melbourne. And it's quite distinct. I don't know why we're telling the professor this other than...
he's going to use it in his next study.
He does want to do an exploration into what I've termed Bogan Vogue. And
I love how you're so keen to get this term.
I know. It'll be in the next paper. I love it.
It will be.
Professor, I should acknowledge that MCV did a story on your paper and that paper is about to be published very shortly in... Sociology magazine?
Sociology, yeah, it's a thrilling read.
I can only imagine.
But it's an academic journal, yeah, so no surprises
there. But it's a highly regarded one.
It is, yeah.
And following on from their article, I got in contact with you. And, Professor, we have a letter to the editor that's in the current issue of MCV titled Chavs, It's Academic. Markey writes, as a newly arrived POM, I think there are far more important things to study than this. Your report doesn't mention why this is important or of any consequences, and nor is it new. Oscar Wilde had a thing for working class lads over a century ago. Australia has enough problems to sort out, so this sounds like a load of academic bullshit to justify your job. What would you like to say to Mark?
Ouch.
I just read that I was sitting outside for the first time. Thanks, Mark.
No, I think it's Markey.
Oh, Markey. Yeah, sorry. Thanks, Markey. Probably a couple of things. Social division is a major issue in Australia. There was reading a piece on Saturday about social class in this country and the cleavage or the division between Australia's espoused egalitarianism and the reality of its social division.
We work very hard at not acknowledging any class structure in this country. We work very hard at not acknowledging racism and we've worked very hard at not acknowledging the gay and lesbian community as a general rule. Fortunately, we have Joy 94.9 to scream it loud from the rooftops and you to do some studies. Although I must admit, the first thing that I thought when I saw and read the article was Oscar Wilde had a thing for street kids.
I mean, as I said earlier on, there are a number of different historical precursors to this. To some extent, Markey's right. There is... you know, nothing particularly new about that in terms of cross-class sex and in terms of Oscar Wilde fancying street kids. I mean, an element of chav discourse is actually paedophilia. So if you read some of the sex lines, for example, you can phone up. Some of them are actually explicitly courting paedophilic contexts and paedophilic experiences, which are advertised in Attitude and so on. So that's an element of it that I'm quite uncomfortable with, but it is part of the scene. Yeah.
Right. Is it part of what I might want to compartmentalise as fantasy play?
Yeah.
Or, and in that it's the language that they use, or are we talking pedophilia? I know it might sound to some listeners that the two are the same, but they can be very different.
Yeah.
The language we sometimes use comes from realms that others might consider
medieval,
dark and ugly places.
Yeah.
Yeah,
fantasy play.
Fantasy play. What is the, say, take the skinhead culture and how that grew out of the neo-Nazi sort of thing out of Eastern Europe, but that was then turned into something totally gay and is still a very, really strong gay cultural element. How would you compare this chavism to the skinhead evolution?
Yeah. I think where it shares a very particular similarity is in terms of the desire for a straight and aggressive masculinity. So I think the sexual fantasy here, the desire is for a masculinity, a particular gender, rather than just having sex or a particular body.
Real skinheads would be revolted, I would have thought, by gay men as skinheads because they're anti-gay. So what's going on there?
Sure. I mean, I'll answer that in terms of chavs. I think one of the things that chavs is about is a desire for a straight or heterosexual masculinity. And it's also a desire, you could interpret it as a desire for our oppressors. Yeah. So what you have with this heterosexual masculinity is a violence associated with it, is a desire perhaps for furtive sex, for rough sex, and perhaps even the threat of being beaten up or being raped.
I had a friend, very good friend years ago, that used to go to straight pubs and get really pissed.
Yeah.
And he'd just by himself go of his own accord and he would start chatting up other guys at the bar and buying them drinks and getting them really drunk. And the whole purpose of the exercise was to take them home.
Yep.
Now, I used to worry like hell that he was going to get beaten to a pulp. And do you know what he came back with when I asked him this question? Mm. He said, bashed or fucked, either way I win.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I think it's a very similar phenomenon with chavs, you know. I think that it is exactly about, I mean, if these straight guys actually knew what was going on and the kind of desires and sexual fantasies that were being attached to them, chances are, you know, you get your face punched, you get beaten up, but maybe that's part of the attraction, maybe that's what it's for.
I like how you're quoted in the article in MCV as saying, what you'd like to know is how many of these men, these middle class yuppies, if you like, that like to dress up in this chav drag, how many of these men realise that when they're at a gay club, all the other chav drags are there as well, and you don't really know whether you're getting the real thing or not.
No, that's it. Well, one of the great parts about the Andrew Fraser article is just this. He got really quite hot and turned on by this one guy that he thought was, you know, an authentic chav from some council estate in London. Starts chatting him up, and then a few hours later figures out that he also has a loft apartment somewhere in the Docklands as well. And he was deeply disappointed that he was missing out. I'm going to guess that most guys in that club do come from a Docklands area. They're mostly middle class or professional guys seeking a quick thrill, a walk on the wild side. But actually, there's very little risk involved because chances are they're not really going to meet an authentic chav. What they'd need to do probably, if they wanted to risk it, is go out to a council estate. Now, who's going to be
and
doing
get their
that?
Head beaten?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We're talking to Professor Gavin Jack, and we've got an SMS from a listener who's listening all the way from Hobart on joy.org.au.
It says, "Hi guys, I'm just listening to your show. I have a number of friends who are attracted to chavs. It's the masculinity they're attracted to. It's sort of like a hot bogan. All the best, David."
Thank you, David, for that. All the way from Hobart.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it is an attraction to a straight, to a heterosexual masculinity.
I refer to my penchant for leather as being a hyper-masculine expression of gay sexuality.
Yeah.
Chavism is just a modern version of that,
that's
I guess.
It, that's it. I mean, there are a number of pieces of academic research that look at the 1970s in particular as a point in time where there was a proliferation of new possibilities for masculine styles amongst gay men. So this kind of break that equated gay men with women, or gay men can only be effeminate or have feminine characteristics. And at that point, it became possible to express one's sexuality in terms of a number of different masculine styles. So the leather guy, the cowboy, and to some extent, quite stereotypical ideas that we might have now. And I think that chavs are almost a new form of market segmentation there, a new kind of masculine style that follows in that trajectory. But what connects them all is not just the masculinity, but you'll notice with a lot of those masculine styles, they actually enact working class pastimes. So there's that connection there of social class and sexuality that's been opened up for us as a community.
One of the things that was huge in the 70s was those crutch-hugging, skin-tight jeans, and I'm really pleased to see them back in fashion on the streets here of Melbourne right here, right now. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back talking to Professor Gavin Jack very shortly. This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek. I think you'd have to be gentle.
We're talking to Professor Gavin Jack and his study that's soon to be published in Sociology magazine, titled Consuming Chavs, The Ambiguous Politics of Gay Chavinism. Let's talk about the commercial side of this. There is, I guess, the letter to the editor in the MCV was asking the question, why is this important? And from a marketing perspective, from a cultural evolution perspective, it's very important to know why we're buying things. And what is influenced the buying of things, and I guess the thoughts around why those things have become associated with certain groups in society. Why is a label a premium, elitist, high-end label? Why is a Tommy Hilfiger tracksuit, you know, adopted by these guys?
Well, one answer to that particular question is that it's supposed to give you cultural capital to mark you out, give you a way of expressing your status that differentiates you as superior or belonging to a better group as someone else. So that's how brands are supposed to work. And brands are also supposed to work by creating an emotional attachment between...
Very much so.
Yeah, between the consumer and the product themselves. So brands have longevity because of those emotional associations.
Any marketer will tell you that a brand is no good unless there is an emotional attachment. That's right.
So in the particular case of Chavs, I mean, why those particular brands is an interesting question. I think the answer is to do with some of the kind of the aspirations that Chavs might have. But of course, the particular brands they buy are knockoffs of them. They're fakes. They're not the real thing.
I'm presuming the gold chains aren't 24
The gold
carat.
Chains are not 24 carat from what I can tell.
They're
the
not real caps, diamonds?
Probably not the real thing. Probably something off a market.
But the UK has really strong piracy, copyright, international patent laws. Yeah. What's going on there? Who's policing it or who's not policing it?
It's easy enough to get knockoff brands and
can you go into a shop and get that?
You could probably get cheap versions of them that look pretty similar to the original one. More likely you're going to go to a market or a pound shop, for example. There are plenty of examples of distributed copies that are not exactly the same as the original, but fairly close to them. So they're fairly widespread, a lot of these brands. But, I mean, to come back to one of those initial questions you asked, I mean, where did this come from and the role of marketers? I mean, that's a very interesting question insofar as I see gay marketing and media professionals as being interested in seeing what's cool, what can they make a new buck from, what can they make a profit from. And it so happens that at this particular point in time, it seems that the underclass were the latest fashion accessory. What that tells us, though, I think, about consumers of Chavs, that the consumption is a pretty ironic consumption. There's a knowingness about it. The consumers realise that Chavs style is pretty crappy. It lacks an aesthetic sophistication. It's quite down market, but we like that. There's a knowingness about it.
It's
that's
kind of
shared.
Gaudy and what we'd kitsch, sort of.
Kind of kitsch.
Yeah.
And that knowingness is a way amongst a group of communicating a sense of belonging, but also superiority to other groups.
I still want to know how these street urchins keep their whites so white. Where is this going to take us and your research here in Australia?
Well, that's a really terrific question. Thank you for asking.
You know, I don't reckon you can go undercover as a bogan because the accent's just not going to work for you.
It's going to give it away.
Yeah.
Well, I am.
However, I can help you with this.
Oh,
so
fantastic! Thank
if you need a research assistant,
you're a willing participant.
Well, not only am I a willing participant, but my first boyfriend I would class as a bogan. I met him at a beat. He had jeans that you honestly must have sprayed on because they were so tight. Greek boy. Huge bulge. We went out for 2.5 years. He was wonderful. Great sex. Anyway, that was my Bogan connection. Tell me about your Bogan connection here in Bogan Vogue.
Well,
yes.
I love that term, Bogan Vogue, and it might appear in the next issue of Sociology in about 3 years' time, if we're lucky. No, I want to take it in various directions. I don't just want to focus on the Bogan Vogue aspects of it. I'd like to do a broader study of the social class dynamics of Melbourne's gay community. And there are a number of ways of approaching that. One would be, for instance, to talk to people in partnerships where the partners come from different social classes and figuring out how they negotiate any differences they have between them and for perhaps, you know, what happens when you meet the family and you bring along a Bogan as your new boyfriend.
I'm sure there are a lot of stories out
some
there.
Some accounts of those I'd be very interested in. I'd be interested to know and hear about stories of those in the Melbourne area that go seeking cross-class sex. Why do they do that? How do they experience it? How do they go about doing it?
Oh, good route's a good route. No, I'm all for that.
I don't know. I think there's a connection to, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe the kind of Bogan-esque repressed homosexuality that they have to, I don't know, fuck like they're fucking a woman? I don't know. I'm getting a really rough like image in my head. Is that what
good
it was
route's
like?
A good route. I think it's as simple as that. What about the Australian surf culture, where that has become a real consumer-driven, I guess, commodity, that you don't have to be a surfy to put board shorts on. In fact, those brands have gone international and are sought after for the cultural aesthetic that they present. Most of the stuff isn't bought by surfies.
That's something I've not thought about, to be honest. It's certainly not something I've come across in the UK. There aren't too many people going around in
bodies and sales.
Yeah, exactly, and on the London club scene. So that's certainly something to follow up on in the next year or so.
I think this also might kind of link with the AFL maybe scene.
Well, yes. I lived with a flatmate who used to dress up in his, when he'd go out to trades place to pick up trade, he would get in his footy gear and take off. And I'd look at him and go, that's heaven. AFL drag. Love it. We've been talking to Professor Gavin Jack about his study titled Consuming Chavs, The Ambiguous Politics of Gay Chavinism. It's being published very shortly in Sociology magazine. Professor, thank you very much for joining us on the Hide and Seek.
Thank you very much. It's been fantastic.
I think we'll have you back another day. You're listening to Hide and Seek. This is Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.